Well, welcome to Footnotes and Podcast 4. My friend Stuart Milson, the classical music editor of the Quarterly Review, is with me. I'm Richard Dove, and we're taking a local lockdown approach to this one, Stuart. We're at the St. James the Great Churchyard, and we're socially distanced, of course.
We are.
And we're going to look very forensically at Arnold Baxter's Tintagel piece. I'll leave Stuart to set the scene.
Well, we're looking towards the coast of Cornwall. So banish all thoughts of grey January. We're in Cornwall, and it's the summer. The beautiful blue of the ocean is before us, and it's the summer of 1917. And Arnold Bax, British composer, is on a long summer holiday with his muse and mistress, Harriet Cohen. And we don't know what Mrs. Bax thought of this summer holiday, but Arnold Bax, British composer, who was greatly interested in and absorbed by Celtic legend and the ancient history of Britain, he went on holiday to Tintagel in Cornwall, and in his romantic time there with Harriet, he created what must be one of the most remarkable tone poems. Just on cue, the bell of the church.
Delightful. Now, people know where we are.
We're in Cornwall for the purposes of this programme. Bax had a vision of the Arthurian past, and he linked it to the drama of the seascape and the cliffs and the castle. And the result is a symphonic poem that lasts about 15 minutes. It's been recorded many times by the greats such as Sir John Barbarolli, Sir Adrian Boult. The work has a very thick, lush orchestral structure. The orchestra that plays it in the recording that we're going to hear is the BBC Philharmonic. This is a recording from 1983. The conductor, Sir Edward Downes, was well known as a conductor of Richard Strauss, the great German composer. And in his reading of Tintagel, there is a Straussian intensity which, for me, gives this work an enormous sense of surge and power, huge momentum, and it's linked very much to the idea of the sea and sea drift and the waves crashing against the Cornish coast. But it is not just a picture of nature, because as the work develops, we're taken into a dream world. It's as if the natural world has dissolved, and suddenly we're into a vision of the Arthurian past. We hear in the cadences of the music a change. It becomes darker. The modulation and the texture and the cadences of it descend into a slightly darker key. The sunshine of the coast and the sea drift and the sound of the gulls seems to whirl and swirl into a sense of somebody being overpowered by a vision. And it's a tendency that many British composers had at that time. John Ireland, for example, he was very influenced by the Channel Islands and the South Downs and Dorset. And John Ireland claimed to have had visions of an ancient past on the South Downs. And this is very similar to what Bax felt at Tintagel. One of the interesting things about the work, there is a ghost of Wagner's Tristan and Isolde which runs through it. And in parts of the score, you can hear a quotation or an imprint and a shadow of some of Tristan and Isolde. I wonder if Bax saw himself as Tristan and Harriet his muse. It's a modern-day British Tristan and Isolde that's unfurling by the Cornish cliffs. Let's listen to the opening, which is a magical evocation of light and nature and the sea. But can I just read what Bax wrote? In the preface to the score, Bax revealingly says, "Though detailing no definite programme, this work is intended to evoke a tone picture of the castle-crowned cliff of Tintagel, and more particularly the wide distances of the Atlantic, as seen from the cliffs of Cornwall on a sunny but not windless summer day. In the middle section of the piece, it may be imagined that with the increasing tumult of the sea arise memories of the historical and legendary associations of the place, especially those connected with King Arthur, King Mark, and Tristan and Isolde." Thank you.
As I listened to it, I lay on my sofa and I was suddenly taken into this, because I've been to Tintagel and I could imagine the scene. And I'm then wonderfully drifting and watching the sea from the cliffs, and you get that real sense of drift and the undulations of the sea.
Yes.
And it's very evocative, isn't it?
It's so remarkable. It gives you the tingle factor. It really does. It's a sense of experiencing something almost supernatural on a summer's day. This is not the supernaturalism of the dark or spooky gothic places. This is the broad daylight in which the sun and the sense of nature. This is an idea that Delius had. The world is powered by the force of nature. We mentioned the term sea drift, and that was actually the title of a work by Delius. And it's odd, because the first time I heard Tintagel was at a performance at the last night of the Proms, 1980, and Tintagel and Delius's sea drift were both on the programme. So the calmness of the sea, and there's a sense about 5 minutes into the work of a seagull circling, I should say, over the water. And as this theme develops, there's a disquieting undertow, there's a slight hint of danger, and this is where the thoughts of being in the present begin to dissolve. And I'd like just to read something else that Bax said. What he wrote about the sea here has a bearing upon the seascape in Tintagel. And he talked about the surface of the sea. A small ship is adventuring toward the sunset from the shores of Erin. The little craft is borne on beneath a sky of pearl and amethyst, until on the crest of an immense, slowly surging wave, it is tossed onto the shore of Fan's Miraculous Island. Here in Tintagel, we're not at Fan's Miraculous Island, we're in King Arthur's realm, we're in a place of war and passion. As the theme begins to fragment and become jagged and atonal, there is an unnerving sense that begins to manifest itself in the music, and we're suddenly swallowed by the crashing of the waves and the clash of arms in King Arthur's Britain, and it's an immensely powerful moment. The glory of CDs is that you can go to the exact seconds, and we're 7 minutes 32 seconds into Max's Tintagel, in the middle of the storm, and it's a great storm sequence. Other composers later on in the 20th century, such as Britten, evoked the sea, and in Britten's Peter Grimes there's the famous storm sea interlude, but this is a majestic roar of the ocean bound up with a sense of the chivalric times of King Arthur. And it's very interesting that Bax was obsessed by the Celtic world. He said that the Celt within me stands revealed. Another peculiar part of Bax's psyche is that there wasn't, as far as I know, an ounce of Irish or Celtic blood in Bax. He was just one of these Englishmen who suddenly latches on to a spirit in some far-off place. And yeah, he had a lifelong identification with the Irish nationalist cause. And it was was quite odd that in his later days, this Irish nationalist, Arnold Bax, became master of the king's music. And that was remarked upon. Oddly enough, he wrote a march for Queen Elizabeth's coronation. And many people commented on how unpomp and circumstance-like it was. It was actually like a slow parade of druids through an ancient landscape. And this is what we have in Tintagel. It's a sense of all of Bax's love of nature, love of the power of nature, love of Celtic culture, combining in one highly distilled, potent brew.
I'm on my sofa and I'm feeling very disturbed now. I was relaxed, but I'm not relaxed any longer, and I'm wondering what's heading for me next.
Well, the relaxation will come back, albeit briefly, because at 8 minutes 53 into Sir Edward Downes's recording, the lovely seagulls reappear, the sense of the birds circling and the cries of birds in the distance, and the castle and the cliffs begin to manifest themselves again like a vision, and we reach this ecstatic orchestral climax begins to develop. From this recording, you can really hear the tremendous brass playing of the BBC Philharmonic of 1983. It's an overwhelming performance, and strangely enough, it was just recorded in the Studio 7 at Manchester. It wasn't before a live audience, but my goodness, I mean, if it was, I could imagine the audience roaring at the end.
We're heading now to the conclusion of the piece.
Yes, it's another great moment in British orchestral music. It's astonishing how Bax produces, more than he did in any of his symphonies, this great plateau of sound at the end, and the sustaining brass sound, the great sheen of strings that you can hear. It is one of the true great achievements, I think, of music in our country, from one of our lesser-known composers. I mean, Bax is not on everybody's lips. I mean, he's known, obviously, to proms audiences, to conductors, to people at the English Music Festival. He wrote seven symphonies, and Sibelius said of Bax, "You are my son in music." And what a great sense of a saga. Sibelius' great work was Ensaga, a saga. But this work, Tintagel, this is a true saga, but in 15 minutes. What an incredible achievement to have almost distilled your whole symphonic oeuvre into one work. And this is what I think he manages to do. And we hear the great coming together of the piece and its remarkable, proud and noble sense of distance and energy and history combined in one.
We'll leave you then with that. Goodbye for now.
Goodbye.